He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
Don't
I
know.
Mean, she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Monday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark before dark this evening. We're in for Baloo all week here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM as Rick enjoys a little vacay. You got to get it in, man. That calendar is just rolling on by. We got rookie minicamp at the end of this week. We have OTAs beginning 2 weeks from today. As a matter of fact, as the Jaguars begin to get back out on the field, we'll certainly talk about rookie minicamp. I want to dedicate some time each night this week on Hacker After Dark about the rookie class, the 9 guys that were drafted by the Jaguars and realistic expectations for those players coming in to 2024. We'll begin with 2 guys tonight, and we will work our way through the list. So a lot of Jaguar talk tonight. Dave Campo, our head coach, here on Hacker After Dark. It's always Monday night coaching with Campo. During the season, we get the coach periodically during the offseason. Tonight is one of those nights, so Dave Campo will stop by in less than 20 minutes. And at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, my buddy Mike DiRocco, D-Rock, ESPN.com, will review the Jaguar offseason, and we will look ahead to Jaguar rookie minicamp. So that's what's coming up here in hour number 1, primarily the Jaguars, and we will start with them, and we will start with a little coping mechanism that I had yesterday personally in my sports world, because every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night, and J.J. LaSelva. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
So, my beloved Orlando Magic fell yesterday and their season came to an end. And we'll talk about them in the 7 o'clock hour with Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports as he will join us to kind of talk about the end of the year and what the offseason will hold for Orlando. It was nice here locally for Orlando Magic basketball to mean something again. I mean, look, if you want to get a little ambitious on I-95 and I-4, we're 90 minutes away from the Kia Center in downtown Orlando. We're definitely an hour and 45, an hour and 50 minutes away, even if you drive like Morgan Freeman from Driving Miss Daisy. It's not a far trip. So Orlando basketball should mean something here in the city of Jacksonville, just like Jaguar football should mean something in the city of Orlando. And it was nice that while the Magic started winning again for the first time in a while, that people here started caring. I mean, heck, we were airing their games on 1010 AM throughout the latter parts of the season. But yesterday, I had about an hour of grief, right? They lose in 7 games. It sucked, don't get me wrong. But I found myself with a much different take on Orlando's season than I did on the Jaguar season. To me, when Orlando lost yesterday, man, it felt an awful lot like Jacksonville losing to Kansas City back in 2022. It felt an awful lot like, yeah, the loss stings and it's awful, but the future is so bright. And I had Orlando people texting me today saying, yeah, we lost, but the future is bright. And I said, I hear you. I agree with you. But don't take it for granted, because we said the same thing here in Jacksonville after that loss in the divisional round to Kansas City. And what happened? They didn't even make the playoffs the year after. You never know. As bright as futures may look, and they do look bright in Orlando with Paolo Banchero, they do look bright here in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence. But you never know. You got to take advantage of current situations and never look too far down the road. But I do think it's interesting parallels between the Magic and the Jaguars. 2 very loyal fan bases, right? Say what you will about Jaguar fans that get ripped nationally. I've said this for a while. You guys are some of the most passionate fans in the league, some of the most loyal fans in the league, for the absolute nonsense that you had to put up with for the better part of 15 years, and you're still at that stadium every Sunday. Orlando, kind of the same thing. That team has been awful for most of the last decade, yet that arena in downtown Orlando has been filled a bunch, watching an awful product. But both teams appear to be ascending at the same time. And you see the excitement here in Jacksonville with the Jaguars now. You're getting that same level of excitement in Orlando with the Magic. And as a guy that, well, supports the Magic, I am a Magic fan. Of course, JJ, I'm an objective journalist when it comes to the Jaguars. You can't root for the Jags, right? You can't do that. You got to be an objective broadcast journalist. It is nice to see both teams' arrows pointing up because, man alive, when you cover both teams or when you're a fan of both teams, there have been some downtrodden times for both Orlando and Jacksonville. It appears both arrows are pointing up. Certainly the arrows are pointing up. I'm not debating that. But just be careful if you're Orlando, and I guess if you're Jacksonville, to think that it's going to be success for the next decade. It's going to be better times for the next decade, but it doesn't mean ultimate success. You got to work at it. You got to build. You got to build around Paolo in Orlando and around Trevor Lawrence here in Jacksonville. But, JJ, I got to tell you, you're as big an NBA fan as I am. Even in the loss yesterday, man, Paolo Banchero is a star, and he will be a star in this league. It was first game seven of his career, and to have 38 points and 16 rebounds when basically none of his teammates decided to show up other than him, unbelievably impressive what Banchero did in a losing effort yesterday.
Yeah, he didn't shoot well, but he had to. He had to take every single shot because the offense is so anemic. Like, Franz was terrible.
Awful.
Pretty bad this whole year.
Yeah, Franz was 1 of 15, which I think for 15 field goal attempts was one of the lowest Game 7 field goal attempts in NBA history.
And Suggs is never going to – you don't expect him to be one of those scorers, but those are the number 2 and 3 scorers on their team. So when Franz is going on for 15, you're going to have to jack up 30 shots. Him and the Trevor comparison I think is good. Because they both seemingly are going to be great players. I would say Paolo in the NBA is on track to be a better player than maybe Trevor is right now in the NFL. I can see Paolo becoming, you know, an all NBA player. I don't know if we're going to see Trevor as like the elite of the elite quarterbacks, but maybe right under that. So yeah, I think the Magic have a really bright future, but man, up 18, game
agreed.
Seven, it yeah. sucks. But that's just how the NBA is nowadays. Like, when they were up that much, I never once did I think the game was close to over. You know, first of all, it was so early in the game, and then leads nowadays in the NBA mean absolutely nothing. I think like Denver had a double digit lead in every single game against the Lakers in a series they won in 5 games. So, yeah, no lead is safe. The Magic, that scoring drought in the third quarter was just, man, it killed them. I really thought they would be able to hold on around halftime, but whatever. It was a great season. It just was sour how it ended.
They got to get shooting. They got a lot of money. There's already rumors about Klay Thompson leaving Golden State for Orlando, potentially Paul George, Malik Monk. So we'll see. But a great season for Orlando. And I've been thinking about the Banchero Trevor Lawrence comparison for a while because I'm very close to both teams, have followed both teams for years and years and years. And again, it's been awful here in Jacksonville. Let's not sugarcoat it. It has been awful really since 2007, I guess, up until they had the cup of coffee in 17, and it's been bad until recently. In Orlando, much of the same thing. I mean, Dwight Howard's been gone over a decade. They have been bad in Orlando for the better part of a decade. But now you have 21-year-old Paolo Banchero, 24-year-old Trevor Lawrence, North Florida, Central Florida, separated by 90 or so minutes. Those are going to be the faces of these two franchises, and there certainly is cause for a lot of fans, both in Orlando and here in Jacksonville, to be very optimistic about the futures. That brings me to Jaguar rookie minicamp. That gets underway, I believe, on Thursday. I want to say it's going to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I guess the big story nationally is that Jarvis Landry is going to participate in the workouts. We'll see if anything materializes there. Could mean something, could mean nothing. That's yet to be determined. But every night here on Hacker After Dark, again, in for Blue this week on 1010XL, I want to focus on a couple guys from the rookie class leading into rookie minicamp. And we'll start tonight towards the bottom of the class, and we'll work our way up as the week goes on. So when you look at the bottom of the class, that means seventh rounder Miles Cole is one of the guys I want to talk about tonight. And this is a Trent Baalke guy, right? A developmental guy. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to in the last week, week and a half since the draft, and ask them about the draft class. And I ask them about Miles Cole, and they say developmental, developmental, developmental. That's kind of what he is. He's 6'6", 280 pounds. I mean, he's a monster, but he's a project, right? It's going to take some time. That's why he was available in round number 7. I would not be surprised at all if he is a prime candidate for the practice squad. I would be a little surprised if he made the 53-man roster. Of course, more on that as we get deeper into the offseason. But that's a guy that I'm interested in watching, not only in rookie minicamp and OTAs, but certainly when training camp arrives in July. You can't teach 6'6", 280 pounds, all right? You can teach a lot of things, but you can't teach that. You either have size or you don't. You either have a ridiculously long wingspan or you don't. And Miles Cole has both of them. And for the defensive end, those are obviously very good traits. So is there something to work with Miles Cole? Well, the Jaguars obviously believe there is because they drafted him in the 7th round. Similarly, there are a lot of positive traits about 6th round pick Cam Little. You know why I know that? Because 2 days after they drafted Cam Little out of Arkansas in round number 6, they cut Joey Sly, the kicker that was thought to be the leader in the clubhouse for the job. So have they basically handed the kicking duties to Cam Little already? A 20-year-old who doesn't turn 21 until, I believe, the month of August. He'll be 21 in training camp. He's 20 all the way up until training camp. Youngest kicker to ever be drafted in the National Football League. But, man, what a leg. 56-yarder in college. Hit a game winner to beat the Gators last year in Gainesville. If you saw that interview with him after he got drafted, guy's confident, man. The guy has a little moxie to him. He kind of liked that for a kicker. He's certainly not afraid to speak his mind. Many people will tell you they thought he was the best kicker in the draft. And maybe the reason he didn't go higher than the other guys was because he was 20 years old. Because he was did not have a full college experience like, say, a Will Riker did at Alabama. But certainly when you get out to rookie minicamp and OTAs and particularly training camp when the fans can go out there, I don't expect there to be a kicking competition. Riley Patterson is here, right? Remember Riley Patterson, the guy that won the Charger playoff game. He is going to be the quote-unquote competition, but let's be honest. When you use a 6th-round pick on a kicker, they want Cameron Little to be the kicker. And it's going to be very interesting if he wins that job, and I expect him to, if come week 1 against whomever, we'll say Indianapolis, and you got to trot a 21-year-old rookie out there for a game-winning 47-yarder. That's going to be a lot of pressure on a rookie. We'll see how he handles it leading up through the season. Speaking of the schedule, the rumor has it the schedule may come out on Thursday this week, so we'll know. We already know who the Jaguars play. We already know, for the most part, where the Jaguars play. We just don't know when they play. And that, to me, is always interesting that more people don't realize that. I get a lot of questions about, Hacker, who are the Jaguars going to play? You know, what's it look like? Well, you can find it very easily. In fact, I can tell you right now who 75% of the Jaguar opponents are going to be in 2025, 2026, and 2027. It's on a cycle. You know who they're going to play. You know where they're going to play them. You just don't know when. That's what we'll find out, hopefully, this Thursday is what the rumor is, and we'll kind of go over that this week as well. But just for you know, it's the NFC North. The NFC North. The Jaguars play Chicago, Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit. We know they play their division rivals twice each, Houston, Indy, and Tennessee. I believe it's the AFC East this year as well, which means games against Buffalo, New England, the Jets, and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. So more on that as developments warrant. Coming up next, let's get into the guest lineup with Dave Campo. He's our head coach here on Hacker After Dark. It's always Monday night coaching with Campo. What do coaches look for in rookie minicamp? What will Doug Peterson be looking for this week when the rookies arrive? And what did Dave Campo think about the draft class? Do the Jaguars need to add a veteran edge pass rusher? Do they need to add a veteran corner? We'll talk to the head coach about all of that. My buddy Dave Campo next on a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Rookie minicamp for the Jacksonville Jaguars takes place at the end of the week. Of course, OTAs now are only 2 weeks away as the offseason really does get into high gear with on-the-field activities starting up. With that, it's always Monday night coaching with Campo here on Hacker After Dark. Dave Campo, the head coach, joins us every Monday during the season, and he also joins us periodically here in the off season. Coach, how we doing?
I'm doing great. Everything is good. I'm looking forward to the rookie mini camp coming up. I think that's kind of the start of real activities as far as we're concerned, and I'm looking forward to hopefully we're going to get a chance to take a look at them a little bit.
Coach, you and I did a show together Friday night of the draft, so it's been about a week and a half since you and I last talked, and we were able to talk about Brian Thomas. We were able to talk about Mason Smith. That was it. Every other pick hadn't been made yet. Before we start looking at the guys individually, just your thoughts in totality, how the Jaguars fared with their draft class.
Well, I think they did a pretty good job. I think what they did in free agency allowed them to really zero in on some guys that at that point in the draft, they had a chance to get somebody they think can help them make the football team. I think some of it is based on upside, which I think once you pass, you know, that first round pick, a lot of it is upside. And I think that's something that they, you know, have done a good job with. When you look at these guys as we get through them individually, to me, they solve some things. They solve some depth situation with the defensive line. They got some guys at corner that give them a chance to do some things there. And they even addressed the edge rush in the seventh round with a guy that I think has a little bit of ability. So, to me, it was a good draft. You won't know until you get them on the field. But at the same time, I like what they did.
The head coach, Dave Campo, here with us on Hacker After Dark. All right, you are a defensive backs coach. That's how you buttered your bread during a large portion of your coaching career, both as a defensive coordinator and a defensive backs coach for many, many years. So let's talk about Jerrion Jones and Deontre Prince, the two corners they drafted, one in round three, one in round five. Coach, I know you've seen some tape of these guys. I know you're going to get out and watch them as we get along here in the off season. But your quick thoughts on Jones and Prince as they arrive here in Jacksonville?
Well, I think they specifically looked at Jerrion as a guy that can maybe compete at the nickel position right away. He's a very physical, mature, a good tackler. He's got speed. You know, people look at him, you know, 5'11", 190. The guy runs in the 4.3s, high 4.3s, but he can run. He's played outside and inside. I think that they're going to be able to take a look at this guy. They know him from right down the road. He's familiar with Jacksonville. He was an honorable mention, all ACC player. This guy brings some things to the table. He's, to me, he's a solid pick at that position. Now, I'm a little surprised, although I would bet that they tried to move up a little bit for a corner. But to get this guy, I think they really did a good job. I think he's a very mature, tough individual. I think he'll come in, hopefully, and show that he's got some ability.
And I don't know if this means a hill of beans talking about Jones, but I thought it was interesting. Look, I don't know how many guys' lifelong dream it was to play for the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? But you could tell when they drafted him, particularly in the Zoom call with the media right afterwards, this guy grew up a Jaguar fan. He talked about idolizing Maurice Jones-Drew, and he was genuinely excited about coming to Jacksonville. Again, once they get on the field, that probably doesn't mean all that much, but it was almost kind of refreshing to see a guy be that emotional about coming to Jacksonville. It was a nice change.
Well, I think that means something. You know, again, I mean, he's going to have to be able to do what he does on the field, but I think the combination of him being in that situation where it was really important to him to get there, I think that bodes well. Plus the fact that I think when he looked at our roster, I'm sure he has a feeling that he could come in. I think he has a pretty good character evaluation of himself, and I think he feels like he could come in, make this team, and be a valued member of it in the future. So, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Dak Prescott. When I saw Dak the first time in Dallas, he came out for practice. He didn't know me from a hill of beans. He walks by me and he sees me and he says, "Hey, Coach Campo, good to see you." And this is a guy that was a little baby when I was there. Yet he was a Cowboy. He knew everything about the Cowboys. And I think that makes a difference.
Dave Campo here with us on Hacker After Dark. To the fifth round, DeAndre Prince. Now, again, a fifth round pick is what it is, Coach. I don't know how much you're relying on a guy like Prince in 2024. But clearly there are some analysts that believe the Jaguars got very good value with him in round number five.
I think there's a lot of value with him at five. You know, he can run. He's got a good background. He started at a community college and then ended up there. And I'll tell you what, the guy has knocks down a lot of passes. He's quick. He's another good tackler. You know, I think that – you know, and from a character standpoint, everybody feels like this guy is all about football. To me, those things are important. Again, we got some good players. Orlando Scandrick back in the day with the Cowboys in the fifth round, he started for about 7 years for the Cowboys. So you can find good corners down in that range. I'm hopeful that he just jumps in there and we'll see what happens. I think, I don't know, I have a little bit better feeling about Jerry and Jones than I do him, and maybe it's because of the toughness and all the physical stuff that Jones brings to the table, but I think it was a good pick in that spot.
Coach, the way it stands right now, Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage, Jerry and Jones, throw Monterick Brown in, throw Gregory Jr. in, throw DeAndre Prince in. There are veteran corners that are available, right? Xavien Howard of Miami. We'll see how much he has left in the tank. He's a free agent. Stephon Gilmore is in his, I think, 33, 34 years old range, but he's still available. There's some talk that Marshon Lattimore may want out of New Orleans. Do the Jaguars have enough as it stands right now for you to feel comfortable going into the year, or do you think they need to address that with a veteran corner at some point in the coming weeks and or months?
Well, I'm never completely satisfied. You know, you can't get enough really good cover guys and guys that can rush the passer and can protect the quarterback. So I would certainly continue to be looking. And, you know, some of it may be after this mini camp, just watching these guys on the field of the young players. And there'll be some guys that are new that'll be there as well, I believe. I think you'll get a little bit better feel after that camp as to whether or not they feel like they need to move forward. I know it's not football. I know it's in shorts. But at the same time, I think you can get a feel for what a guy brings to the table on how he reacts, how he learns. Those are the big things about the mini camp. And I would always be looking. I think it just depends on how they feel about it. I kind of like the guys we have. I think even a guy like Darby, you know, brings something to the table. The problem is the injury factor. You know, that's the thing that is in the back of your mind you're not sure of. So do you bring in a guy that's like they're looking at Landry as a receiver? I think you're always looking for a guy like that.
Couple of more for our head coach here on Hacker After Dark, my buddy Dave Campo. Coach, they went to LSU not once, not twice, but three times. You and I talked about Brian Thomas. We talked a little bit about Mason Smith. We have not talked about Jordan Jefferson, the other defensive lineman they brought in from LSU. Your thoughts on Jefferson and all three of those guys coming from Baton Rouge together, that should make the transition to the NFL somewhat easier for them with some familiarity, correct?
Well, there's no question that when you come in with somebody that's, you know, part of you, been part of you for a number of seasons, one season or whatever, that's a factor as well. But it still comes down to whether the guy can play or not. This kid, Jefferson, they're going to have – I'm going to put it this way. This guy's got some talent. Ed Ogeron, I know very well, was a GA for us at Miami when I was there. I talked to Ed after the draft. He likes both of those guys a lot. I think Nielsen has a relationship with Ed Ogeron as kind of a mentor. These guys have a lot of information on this guy. The one thing I know for sure, let me just put it this way. With the combination of Mason Smith and Jefferson, let's say neither one of them could rush the passer. I guarantee you both of them could stop the run. And I think that's something that we really needed here to firm up those inside guys with rotation. And to me, I think both of those guys have a chance to be factors this year, whether it's in a rotation or whatever it is. But stopping the run is important in this league, and I think that Jefferson brings that to the table without anything else. But he's also had 7 tackles for loss as a senior or his third year, you know, in 23. I think the guy's got a chance, and I'm happy we have him.
Yeah, one of the strongest guys in the draft, too. I think he had 34 reps on the 225 bench press at the combine, which is pretty wild. Coach,
There's your nose tackle right there.
Yeah, the Devon Hamilton, and now you add Jefferson to the mix, there's no question. Coach, you and I, along with all our colleagues here in Jacksonville last offseason, every time Doug Peterson came to the podium in May, June, and July, and August, we asked, are you going to do anything at the veteran edge pass rush position? And every time we were told, no, we like the guys we have. We think the young guys are going to develop. I truly hope we don't do that same song and dance this year, all right? Now, I don't know if Bud Dupree or Carl Lawson or any of these guys either have anything left in the tank or could help you in a big way, but I'm willing to pay one of those guys a handful of dollars to come in and find out. Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, fantastic. Travis Gibson, I think that's an under-the-radar guy. We'll see. After that, they just don't have a lot at the edge rush position again, and I truly hope they learned a valuable lesson last year in not signing a veteran when they probably needed to, and they don't make that mistake 2 years in a row. What's your thought there?
Well, I don't know that they have learned their lesson because, you know, I don't see it, you know, happening at this point. I'll be disappointed if it doesn't. I'm with you on that. I would certainly bring in one of those veterans if you can get them at the right price and let them prove that they can't do it anymore or whatever. Because I think right now when I look at Gibson and I watched Gibson when he was at the Chicago Bears back in the day. And that's one of the reasons he's here because Shuey coached him. So they feel good about him. But I look at him as maybe a fourth pass rusher rather than a third. Right now you're looking at the kid from last year, the small kid. I don't know that that they have enough in that rotation. Now, the one thing that they do have an advantage with is the guy that they got from San Francisco can move outside as well. You know, he's a little bit like Calais Campbell. I think he could play outside, inside. That gives them a little bit of leeway there, but I certainly would think that they would be looking at a veteran pass rusher just to see where he's at.
Final moments with our head coach, Dave Campo. Of the other draft picks, Coach, Javon Foster, the tackle from Missouri, Keelan Robinson out of Texas. That goes to show you how important the new kickoff rule is. The Jaguars invested a draft pick. They got a confident kicker, right, who's only 20 years old, and Cam Little, and you mentioned Miles Cole out of Texas Tech. Of any of the guys that we haven't talked about yet, did any of those picks stand out to you?
Well, I think the guy that stands out to me more than anything else is Foster. because, you know, they need some backup depth. And the one thing about that guy now is he was a team captain for 2 years, and he's a pretty physical athlete. I think he brings something to the table. I'm interested to see him, you know, once they go to training camp and all that, because, you know, that's where you're going to find out where he's at. I think he's one of those guys that has some ability. And to me, that's a position that they had to address, because you don't know what's going to happen with Cam Robinson and Walker Little next year. Who knows what's going to happen there? But I think the guy, he was a first-team All-SEC, which says something to me. A big guy, 320 pounds or something like that at 6'5". I'm really excited to kind of see who he is, because I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you, I'm a much better guy looking at skill guys than I am offensive linemen. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this guy in action.
Yeah, 31 starts for Foster there at Missouri, 3 years of starting experience. All right, Coach, rookie mini camp. Not so much the X's and O's. As you mentioned, they're in shorts and helmets this weekend. I mean, it is what it is in the offseason, but they are back on the grass, as they refer to it. They're back on the field. The coaches get a look at these guys. What are the coaches looking for? Kind of what's this weekend like for the rookies? Take us through the process.
Well, first of all, it's a learning experience more than anything else. And it's a kind of a, it's like going to orientation when you first go to college. These guys have really not been in a situation where guys are coaching them here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they're, you know, getting a chance to, they're going to throw a lot at them in 3 days. You'd be surprised how much offense and defense they throw at these guys. And really, it's just to kind of see, you know, in real time, how a guy learns, how much he learns, how quickly he learns. Those are all things that are important. And then there is something to watching guys go one-on-one and some of the stuff that they do, not so much with the offensive and defensive line, but with the secondary guys and the receivers, and they get a chance to really see, you know, what do we need to work on with these guys to give them an opportunity to go. It's even more important now than the old days, because with one less preseason game, you know, those young guys don't really get a chance to show what they can do. We've had guys come in rookie minicamp and get 3-4 interceptions in a rookie minicamp, and you say, well, that's against some quarterback that's probably third string or whatever, and they're just learning the offense and all that. But there is something to playmaking no matter what the situation is. Anybody that even gets to one of those mini camps is a decent football player. So it gives you an opportunity to get a real good feel for these guys, and also to give them a feel for how they're going to be coached and what they're, you know, what they're going to have to deal with as they go forward.
He's our head coach here on Hacker After Dark, my friend Dave Campo. Coach, rookie minicamp, and then we're only about 2 weeks or so away from OTAs, and, of course, veteran minicamp just over a month down the road. Coach, always appreciate you. Thank you for the time, and I'll see you out there real soon.
You got it, Hack. Looking forward to it, and say hello to your family for me.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
That's right, in for Blue this week, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. A lot of NFL news and notes to go through quickly here. You see who visited the Tennessee Titans today? Now, Calvin Ridley, obviously, is going to be wearing the enemy colors of the Tennessee Titans. Could Zay Jones be following him? That's right, Zay Jones, who was released here in Jacksonville last Tuesday, apparently was in Nashville today visiting the Tennessee Titans. Now, some Titans people will tell you that might be a visit to maybe put some pressure on Tyler Boyd, another unrestricted free agent wide receiver that visited Tennessee last week. Odds are Tennessee's going to sign one of those guys, either Tyler Boyd or Zay Jones. Well, they're loading up for Will Levis. They're going to find out about Will Levis this year. With Tony Pollard, with Tajay Spears, DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley. You add Zay Jones for argument's sake. Now, they're not bringing in any young guys, right? These wide receivers are going to have three guys, 29 and plus, a wide receiver. depending on what they do with Treylon Burks, their former first rounder, but they're going to find out about Will Levis. Speaking of quarterbacks, a couple of quarterbacks back on the field. Joe Burrow throwing in Cincinnati earlier today. Saw that video. I wonder if people have forgotten how good Joe Burrow is. Everybody talks about Mahomes and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, and with good reason, right? But Joe Burrow's had a lot of injury problems in the NFL in a very short amount of time, and he's still been awesome when he's been out there. Little changing of the guard for Cincinnati, though. Remember, Joe Mixon is gone. Tyler Boyd is going to be gone. They still have Ja'Marr Chase, right? And they're probably going to have T. Higgins, but maybe not as much firepower with that Cincinnati offense. But you got Joe Burrow. How much firepower do you really need? He's going to make guys around him better. Anthony Richardson back on the field today for Indianapolis. We never got to see Anthony Richardson last year. In fact, the Jaguar game, the season opener, I want to say is the only game Richardson played every snap. He only played less than 170 snaps his rookie year. And the scary thing about that, Indianapolis still went 9-8 and was within a game of winning the division when their star rookie quarterback only played 170 snaps. That's kudos to Gardner Minshew. It's also kudos to the rest of that roster. Can Anthony Richardson stay healthy? That was a problem for him in Gainesville. It was a problem last year in Indy. Of course, Indy did sign Joe Flacco as a little bit of insurance. You see the Tom Brady roast last night on Netflix? JJ, you're a stand-up comedian guy. I hear you in Denmark talking about that all the time. What did you make of the roast last night, the parts you saw for Tom Brady?
I thought it was phenomenal, and a lot of people didn't pull any punches, and I hope it brings the roasts back. I mean, in the mid-2000s, it was like every year we had like a badass roast, and it's been a while, so hopefully this keeps it going or gets it going.
Some of the things were absolutely wild. Made me laugh. It was a lot of sailor talk. I hope your youngsters didn't watch it, but some of that stuff was hilarious. Apparently, and I don't know how to feel about this, just see the response from Aaron Hernandez's fiance.
Hilarious.
So Aaron Hernandez, obviously former Gator, we know that story. The murderer, you know, convicted of murder, was in prison, ultimately died in prison. His fiance apparently was not too pleased with some of the jokes that were towards Aaron Hernandez last night.
She was like, what if his kids watch this? It's like, I think his kids are going to probably find out some stuff about him that is a little worse.
Right. I feel bad for her in a way, but the kids, what if they hear it? Well, one day his kids are going to find out that their father is a convicted murderer.
Yeah.
Which is not, you know, an opinion. That was a fact. He was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison. So I don't know, but I felt bad for her because when you read the interview with TMZ, you could tell, I guess, her feelings were hurt. And it's a roast. I mean, it is what it is. But they certainly did not pull back any punches on the whole Aaron Hernandez situation. By the way, I thought Gronk and I thought Julian Edelman, even Belichick, were fantastic.
They had some great writers.
Oh, man. And the deliveries were good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Belichick took me by surprise. His first joke was like, hey, this is the roast of Tom Brady. Not to be confused with the roast of Bill Belichick that just aired on Apple TV, which he was referencing, that Dynasty documentary that was crap, you know, and apparently took like a ton of shots at him.
Now, again, you're in that world where the stand-up comedian, the whole Nikki Glaser, Jeff Ross, they're on like every roast that I've ever seen.
I don't even know if Jeff Ross does like real comedy or like has like a non-roast act. I'm not sure.
I mean, I saw the roast of Bruce Willis, the roast of Rob Lowe, the roast of Justin Bieber, and now the roast of Tom Brady. And I think Nikki Glaser and Jeff Ross have been on every single one of them.
Was Anthony Jeselnik on last night?
I didn't watch it all.
Oh, okay.
My wife watched all 3 hours because she's a New England girl and she was locked into it. I was watching, I don't even like something with Forrest, and then we end up going to bed.
Could probably just cut that in half.
Yeah, 3 hours is a bit much. But anyway, people seem to like it, and I hope you're right. You know, with where we are now in the world, the
PC police,
lack of better terminology, the political correctness, there was none of that last night in the roast of Tom Brady, and I got a kick out of it, and hopefully those sort of things will come back. And if you missed it, it's on Netflix. It won't be going anywhere for a while. Finally, J.J. Watt, who has retired from the NFL, kinda. Apparently, J.J. Watt's been telling people around him that he would be, quote, open to a comeback with the Texans, of course, the team that drafted him, absolutely if they needed it. If they needed it. He's not going to go searching for it, but if Houston needed it, J.J. Watt would be open to a comeback. That's great and all. I mean, he hasn't played football in 2 calendar years. I don't know what J.J. Watt would have left in the tank. Great player. He's going to be in Canton, Ohio one day. But if the Texans called J.J. Watt, then they got a lot of problems on that defensive line. I'm assuming they hope Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter and Danico Autry will take care of business, and they won't need to call a guy that's been retired now for 2 calendar years. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Here on Hacker After Dark, we'll take you up till 8 o'clock tonight, as we will every night this week, in for Blue here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. Coming up at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour, my buddy Dante Marcatelli down in Orlando, Bally Sports. We'll put a cap on the Orlando Magic season, a great season. Again, Magic basketball began to matter again here in North Florida. People were following it. Paolo Banchero, it's a bright future down there. We aired some Magic games, a lot of Magic games, actually, on 1010 AM. So we'll put a bow on a season, a disappointing end yesterday, but overall a terrific success. So Dante Marcatelli coming up in a little over a half an hour. Coming up next, back in to the Jacksonville Jaguars and the National Football League, Mike DiRocco. We lovingly call him D-Rock, ESPN.com. We'll talk Jaguar draft. We'll talk rookie minicamp. But we'll look forward. Veteran corner. Veteran edge pass rusher. What do the Jaguars need to do to this roster to put a cherry on top of what I think has been a pretty good offseason haul? We'll talk to Mike DiRocco about that next on a Monday evening in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're glad you're with us. Hacker After Dark, 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar draft in the rearview mirror, the rookie mini camp is this week. And, of course, OTAs are 2 weeks as we get into the meat of the offseason schedule. With that, Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. D-Rock, how are you, man?
I'm great, Hacker. How are you?
Hey, man, we are good, Mike. Really appreciate the time today. And, all right, you and I haven't talked since the draft. I think we talked literally hours before the Jaguars drafted Brian Thomas. But before we get into the individual selections, just in, as a whole, in totality, your thoughts on what Trent Baalke and the Jaguars were able to accomplish during the draft?
Yeah, you know, I think overall I would give their draft maybe like a B or a B minus because, you know, they clearly were targeting Brian Thomas and then they were able to drop down 6 spots and add a couple of picks next year and still get the same guy they wanted. So from that standpoint, you know, you win that trade if you're the Jaguars for sure. And they addressed areas of need. They needed another playmaker. They needed to beef up the secondary. They needed to beef up the defensive line. And, you know, they did that with Mason Smith in the second round and Jordan Jefferson in the fourth. And then they took Jarian Jones, the corner out of FSU in the third, and DeAndre Prince, the corner out of, I think, Ole Miss in the fifth. So they added some guys that at positions of need. They're, you know, the pick that really kind of intrigues me a little bit just because not really sure how we're going to see him used is Keelan Robinson, who was drafted as a kick returner. You know, Doug Peterson has talked about, you know, with these new kickoff rules, you can have 2 returners on the field. Obviously, Devin Duvernay, who they signed in free agency, and now this guy, who's a pretty good kick returner. We'll see how they kind of mix and match those guys and how they kind of approach the new kickoff rules. But overall, a solid B, B-minus draft.
Mike, Brian Thomas in, Zay Jones out of the Jaguar wide receiver room as Zay Jones was cut last week. So that leaves the Jaguars, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, Brian Thomas, whatever order you want to put them in. I guess Parker Washington, we talk about Devin Duvernay. We'll see about some of the young players as well. But how would you assess the Jaguar wide receiver room as it is right now?
I would feel a little bit better about it if Zay Jones were there. I mean, not that I feel bad about it now, but I thought that was an interesting move. I'm guessing they did that as a favor to Zay because he clearly wasn't in their plans this year. So you release him now instead of taking him to camp. And you know, then he gets released at the end and it's a free for all to try and land somewhere. So they did him a solid there. But I thought he would be, I mean, I know he was going to count $11 million, and that's a lot of money for your fourth wide receiver. But I just thought the more experienced guys you can put around Brian Thomas, the better. And they essentially play the same position anyway. And I thought Zay would be a good guy to kind of help him get acclimated, you know, along with those other guys as well. But, you know, I like it. If Brian Thomas can give them, you know, the production that they – we're expecting out of Zay, you know, maybe in that 45-50 catch range this year, then I think, you know, they're going to be okay there. And obviously the caveat is, you know, everyone staying healthy, which there's no reason to expect that they won't. But he brings them the over-the-top stuff. And he reminds me, this is probably unfair to say, and it may not be the comparison that people want to hear, but he reminds me of what the Jaguars had in Allen Robinson, just from the standpoint of he's long, he's lanky, he's got big hands, and he can go up and get some of those off-target throws, some of them 50-50 throws. And now they finally really have somebody that they can throw that end zone fade to. So I think we're going to see him used in a variety of ways, you know, especially in the red zone. But it, you know, it's a rough transition, and we'll see how he handles it. But Kirk being in the slot and being healthy makes a world of difference. I think we saw that last year. So overall, you know, they're in pretty good shape. Like I said, I would have liked to have seen Zay stick around at least, you know, through this year and then go off into wherever he was going to go after that. But, yeah, I think they're okay right now.
Mike DeRocco, ESPN.com. D-Rock, rookie minicamp coming up, and apparently Jarvis Landry is going to work out with the Jaguars. Could be nothing, could be something. Obviously, the LSU relationship between he and newly acquired Brian Thomas. What do you make of the Jarvis Landry story that's going to unfold later this week?
You know, he's healthy now, apparently. And, you know, you see those videos that he released on social media last week when this kind of came out, and he looked pretty good. That being said, he's north of 30 and, you know, he hadn't played in a while. You know, we've kind of seen that a little bit, although obviously Calvin Ridley wasn't 30 yet, but a guy that didn't play and then comes back in, it can be a little bit rough at first. So he's like one of the, I want to see what Brian Thomas moves like. I want to see what he looks like catching passes. And we really want to see what Jarvis Landry looks like, because if he's okay, and you can get him for a reasonable amount of money, and I don't know what that number is. We'd have to kind of see, but certainly, you know, you're not going to have to spend $11 million to land Jarvis Landry. Then that boosts that receiving room even a little bit more. Those are the two main things that I want to see out of rookie minicamp, is how those two guys look, because, you know, you're not going to be able to tell, you know, those other guys. I mean, the corners, you'll be able to tell how they move. The defensive linemen, not so much. The offensive linemen, not so much. You know, that's more, we got to see them in pads. But those guys, you want to see if they're fluid, how fast they are. And, you know, the Landry thing really is, you know, pretty darn intriguing, especially if, you know, they feel like, okay, we can add this guy and help out, you know, our group here, with especially with Brian Thomas. So I'm eager to see it. We'll get one day, I think, to look at him on Friday, May 10, and then we'll get another look at him again on the 20th when they have the first OTA.
Mike DeRocco of ESPN.com. D-Rock, you mentioned the defensive line, Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson. I guess if you want to lump Miles Cole in, the seventh rounder as well. What did you make about what the Jaguars did on the defensive line, and where were you with the Mason Smith selection in round two?
I think that's probably their most improved position group after the draft and the offseason, you know, because we clearly know that their run defense was a problem at the end of last year. When they went 1-6, that 1-5 stretch, they gave up 45 more yards per game rushing than they did in the first 12 weeks of the season. That's a significant drop off there. I think they were 29th in the league over that 5-game or 6-game stretch. So that shows you how bad they were against the run, and they had to fix that. Now, Mason Smith, you know, I think has a chance to be a really impactful guy as a rookie. You know, it's going to be fun to see how they mix and match these guys, because obviously Eric Armstead is a huge addition to this defensive line. And, you know, now you've got another guy in Mason Smith, a young guy who, you know, probably needs a little bit, another year or two before he can be really explosive and really be kind of a dominant defensive lineman, which is what they believe he's going to be. But, you know, very athletic, very, very quick. So it's going to be fun to watch those guys. I think, like I said, that's their most improved position group. And if Armstead can stay healthy and give this team 13, 14 games this year, then I think they've got a chance to be pretty darn good up front.
Mike, I agree with you. I think the interior defensive line has been vastly upgraded, with all due respect to the Foley Fatakassis of the world. Having said that, we're very similar to where we were last year at the edge pass rush position. It's Josh Allen, it's Trayvon Walker, and there's just quite frankly not a lot behind them. Now, we'll see about Trevis Gibson. I think he's an upgrade over Kalavon Chaisson, but I think you might have been an upgrade over Kalavon Chaisson, so that's not saying much.
I appreciate that hack.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we did this song and dance last year. I stood there with you at all those press conferences when either you or Mark Long or whomever would ask Doug Peterson, veteran edge pass rusher, are you going to go after one? And the answer always was, no, we like our young guys, and the young guys are going to develop. That was proven to be a mistake. Now, again, I don't know how much Bud Dupree has left or Carl Lawson has left. Those are kind of the two names that you hear. I guess Justin Houston again. But don't they need to bring somebody in, if nothing else, for a rotational piece at the edge pass rush position?
You're right. We are in the same position that they were last year. The only thing that I don't want to say complicates it is we have no idea what that Ryan Nielsen defensive front's going to look like. And how they're going to run things and what they really are going to do with Trayvon Walker on third down. Is he going to rush more from the inside? You know, because that impacts it as well. And I know Trevis Gibson, he had 11 career sacks. 7 of them came when he, I think, was playing opposite Robert Quinn. So if he's not a guy that has to carry the load, then he was okay, solidly effective. And that's what they're going to ask him to do here. He's not going to be the guy that they're going to say, look, we really need 7-8 sacks out of you. I think they'll take the collective approach after the Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker and that, hey, look, those guys got us 27.5 last year. That's probably a little bit high to expect. But if we can get those guys up to 22, you know, 23 combined, which isn't completely out of the question, you know, then we can kind of piecemeal the rest of it. And if you can get 4 or 5 out of Gibson, you know, let's see how that works, because how aggressive are they going to be as well? That's the other thing we don't know. You know, it seems like if you're going to play a lot of man coverage, that gives you the ability to be a little bit more aggressive up front. You want to be more aggressive up front to kind of force those throws quicker. So it's all sort of up in the air until we see what that defensive philosophy or that defensive scheme is going to look like. But I am with you. I thought they should have addressed it. It wasn't a great draft for edge rushers, so I get it. And I just don't know I don't expect them to bring anybody in, any veteran guy in. Let me rephrase that. I don't expect them to sign any veteran guy, because they brought veteran guys in for visits last year, Calais, Unique. That's another guy that I would say, you know what, bring that kid in. But the question with him would be, is he willing to accept the fact that he's not a starter here and that he's going to be a situational pass rusher You know, would that be a problem in the locker room? Because we all know he had those personality clashes with Dante Fowler in the locker room there. And he's a really prideful guy. So I don't know if that signing works, but I don't expect them to sign anybody. I do expect them to bring some guys in. And look, let's be honest, it wasn't a great pass rush last year, but it would have been good enough to get in the playoffs if they had done anything against the run in the last six games of the season.
I'd love for them to bring Ngakoue in so I can ask him why he blocked me on Twitter, because I still don't have the answer to that. So that alone makes it Ngakoue an intriguing name.
Important signing right there, Hack. Important signing.
There's
yes.
No question. Final moments, Mike DiRocco of ESPN.com. D-Rock, the other big question on the defense is at corner. They drafted Jarian Jones. They drafted DeAndre Prince, as you mentioned. You add them to Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage, the two youngsters, Monteric Brown, Gregory Jr. from a few years ago. Where are you with corner and with the knowledge that, you know, Stephon Gilmore, Xavien Howard, potentially a trade for Marshon Lattimore, all that stuff is available. Do you see them doing anything at corner over the coming weeks and or months?
I don't think so. Although, you know, going after Lattimore wouldn't be a terrible idea, and bringing in Xavien Howard wouldn't be a terrible idea. The only problem is those are bigger money deals that you're going to have to end up, especially with Xavien Howard. He's not coming in here for $6 million a year. That's the thing. So, you know, what would the most surprising thing was when we were down at the owners meetings and Doug Peterson said that Darnell Savage, the safety they signed from Green Bay, would probably was going to start as the nickel, which was a little bit surprising. But again, it's a little, what's that going to look like back there in Ryan Nielsen's mind? It sounds like they're going to do a lot of mixing and matching. We may see Darnell Savage at the nickel. We may see Antonio Johnson at the nickel. Jarian Jones could actually start out at the nickel, although I think, you know, he's played both, but they view him as a guy that could start, be a right away starter on the outside if needed. You know, the wild card is Ronald Darby. I mean, can he stay healthy? Because that's been an issue in his career, and what's he going to be able to give you? So, you know, I don't know what their expectation is right now out of Prince, but that's a guy who's very, very hungry from what I've heard. And I'll tell you what, everything I've read and I've looked at on social media, these experts, draft analysts, and, you know, guys from the All-Star games have just raved about Jarian Jones and how that might be one of the steals of the draft. So that's, you know, that's encouraging for the Jaguars for sure. But, you know, I was trying to put together a two deep depth chart the other day on the secondary, and I've got like three guys listed at one at the other outside corner spot, you know, opposite Tyson Campbell. It's like Darby or Jones or, you know, Prince, and then, you know, the same thing at the nickel, Johnson or Savage or Jones or Prince. And it's just it's kind of, for lack of a better word, a mess right now. But again, and I hate to cop out like this, I'm got to see what Ryan Nielsen wants to do with all those guys and how he's going to mix and match them. But if Darby stays healthy, it's not the most ideal situation they've had in the secondary. But, you know, I think they're better than they were in totality last year, because I think Jones and Prince might be an upgrade over, you know, Brown and Greg Jr.
Mike, final question. We got about 2 minutes to go. When they walked off the field in Nashville on January 7th, that was a bad day for the organization. That was a bad day for the fan base. That was a bad day for everybody involved. The biggest late season collapse in franchise history, quite frankly. Now here we are 4 months later. Rookie minicamp on the horizon, OTAs on the horizon. Are they better? Is this a better roster than it was on January 7th?
I think so, yes. You know, obviously losing Darius Williams hurt. We could debate the Rayshon Jenkins, whether that hurts them or helps them for sure. I think they're better on the offensive line just because of the Mitch Moore signing. I think they're better overall, probably a little bit better overall wide receiver if Brian Thomas can kind of give you the production that they had before, or that I was talking about before. Trevor Lawrence is healthy. So if he can stay healthy, I think they'll be okay. I mean, I know that, you know, not to go off on a tangent here, but there's a lot of questions some people have locally about Trevor Lawrence, but I don't understand that. And B, you know, he didn't practice at all during the week, fully practice in any form since December 15th. And then when you hear after the season, when he talked to us a couple weeks ago that he didn't feel fully healthy until sometime in March, you're going, well, that guy should not have been on the field maybe for 2 or 3 weeks. So with him being healthy, I think you'll start to see the production, the kind of production that we all expect out of Trevor Lawrence on a regular basis. So I do think they're a little bit better. The question will be, you know, did last season's collapse scar them, or did it energize them and serve as motivation? Because that's the thing that we don't know until we get to, unfortunately, September when the season begins. Because it could go either way. That could be one of those things that, you know, it takes a long time to recover from for some of those guys mentally, and it could impact the team, or it could be one of those things that galvanizes them and is their motivation going forward.
Mike DiRocco of ESPN.com. D-Rock, I know you're busy, man. Really appreciate the time. I'll hopefully see you out at Rookie Minicamp on Friday, and we'll talk again really soon, pal. Thank you as always.
Appreciate it, Hacker. Thanks for having me.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. It is a Monday evening, and we are glad you are with us. The Orlando Magic season came to an end in Game 7 yesterday in Cleveland. The Magic, 47 regular season wins, 3 playoff wins, turning around this franchise, yet it was a tough way to end it yesterday afternoon. With that, Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Dante, I was sure you and I would be previewing Celtics Magic tonight, man. Unfortunate ending to the year yesterday.
Well, I was hoping, Ryan. I was really hoping, especially the way the game started. You're up by 18. And let me tell you something. That crowd was absolutely zapped. They were starting to turn. George Niang missed a three, and all you could hear was boos and just a smattering of boos. And that crowd was ready to turn. And I think you had them, had the ball in your hands, up 18. Paolo goes to make a move and comes out of his shoe. Literally, the shoe fell off. And then they go down, get a 2-on-1, and ends up in an alley-oop dunk. And now, okay, crowd's reengaged a little bit. Sam Merrill hits a three, and just like that, the crowd was back. I mean, you just wonder, had you been able to score there? Had Sam Merrill not hit a three? You know, are you up by 25 at halftime? And that's a completely different game than only being up by 10. So woulda, coulda, you know, at the end of the day, you had a couple of guys that just really – when your second and third best players shoot a combined 3 for 27, it's just very difficult to win a basketball game the way this team is designed right now. So you just couldn't get any offense whatsoever. Shot less than 40% in the paint for that basketball game yesterday, and it just came down to that, to make or miss league, and could not get enough offense there in that second half.
Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports. Dante, there's far more good than bad to talk about, but let's get yesterday out of the way. For starters, Paolo Banchero, my God, man. 21 years old, his first playoff, his first game 7, and he goes out there and does that? I mean, that guy is going to be incredible for years to come.
Well, there's no question, and I think you just look at it, and the playoffs make or break it, right? And you're always curious to see what these guys have in them when you get to the postseason, and that guy absolutely rose to the occasion. And, you know, so did Franz and Jalen. They had their times where they were huge, but Paolo was so consistent and just such a force for this team. I mean, it was – you knew he did it all year, one of the highest usage rates in the entire NBA. So much runs through him. He's got the ball in his hands constantly. But, okay, here it is, the playoffs, where teams have, you know, you're only scheming for him, right? You're keying in on him. He's at the top of the scouting report. J.B. Bickerstaff, the entire defense, is keying in on not letting Paolo Banchero beat you. Someone else is going to have to beat us. Yet he still gets 38 yesterday. He still had 39 in another game. Still had 31 in his second game. I mean, he was just sensational. What he was able to do. So I think, yes, if you're a Magic fan, you walk away saying, okay, We kind of thought that during the regular season, but there's been a lot of superstars in the league that once you get to the postseason and they got to carry that load, you know, aren't quite able to do it and certainly aren't ready to do it in your first year. he was his first postseason. He was just absolutely sensational. So now, you know, you add some key pieces, you add some shooting, hopefully at some point to kind of open things up for him and Franz in the middle, and the sky's the limit, you know, give him a little more room to operate. And now he's got that under his belt. You think about it, Ryan, you know, he went into this having never gone to a playoff game, never gone to an elimination game, never gone to a game seven, and him and all the guys on this team, they have that behind them. They have kind of checked all those boxes, and now you know exactly what you have to do this offseason, and they'll continue to work, and this one stinks. This one stinks the way they lost, and they'll live with that for the next couple of months, but they'll be better for it, and Magic fans should be incredibly optimistic for what they did this year. You think, I don't know about you, Ryan, but I think the national, you know, Vegas had the odds at 36.5 wins this year. They went for 47. I think most Magic fans will tell you, you know, if we can be competing for 9 or 10, try to grab one of those play-in spots, and they made it all the way up to fifth, one game out of fourth, and it shows you the value of every game, too. You know, if you just didn't come to play in that game in Charlotte at the end of the season. Had you won that, that's one more win, and you have the tiebreaker. And I think we all know that if the Magic had home court advantage in this series, they'd probably be moving on. But just incredibly valuable lessons, incredible experience, and they're going to be better off for it. And the sky's the limit. The sky is the absolute limit for this team.
Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports. Yeah, Banchero, 38, and by the way, 16 rebounds to go with it yesterday. He was absolutely incredible. And that's where I'm at, Dante. I had about an hour yesterday where I kind of had the grieving period, right?
Right.
But then
right.
After that hour transpired, I thought, okay, this team was 22-60 24 months ago. And now this year, they're one of the last nine teams standing. They played longer than Golden State, the Lakers, the Clippers, Phoenix, Philadelphia, Miami.
That's right.
Played longer than all of them. It's kind of hard to be all that upset. Was I hoping for a win? Of course. But after you get the grieving period out, and it took me about an hour, it's like, man, what a year this was for that ball club.
Well, you have an incredible perspective. That's exactly right. And that's what I think at the end of the day, most Magic fans will do. You get excited when you're up by 18 in the first half and you're looking at it thinking, my goodness, this team might be able to pull this out here on the road. But 18 points in an NBA game can be evaporated in minutes. And that's kind of what we saw unfold there at the end of the second quarter and midway through the third. But then you have a chance to process it, and you think about it, and you're like, you've got an all-star now, right? The Paolo Banchero is on a national stage playing in the all-star game. He's probably going to continue to play with Team USA. Franz Wagner and Mo Wagner are going to be playing with Germany during the Olympics here in Paris, so you're going to get to see them on a national stage. And then you start thinking, okay, you know, we've got two lottery picks, and Anthony Black and Jet Howard. Jet Howard played great in the G League, and Anthony Black played great in spot minutes this year. There's two lottery picks that there was no place for them here in the postseason. So now can you work them in? You know, you've got two guys that are hungry to try to get some minutes this year. So you start looking at, you know, the depth of this team and how good can those guys be here down the road. And now Paolo's got everybody on this team now has playoff experience. You got through a season with Jonathan Isaac healthy, which was absolutely incredible. Markelle Fultz made it through the season healthy. And you've got free agent decisions to make on some guys and Gary Harris, Markelle, and a few guys like that. So, you know, you'll kind of have some decisions to make there. But Cole Anthony's got some playoff experience under his belt. Joe Ingles proved himself to be a valuable contributor off the bench, part of that second unit. You got a decision to make on him. He's got a team option for next year. So you've got now a body of work. And finally, I think the thing that's been missing, you know, it's hard to fully judge guys until you kind of see when they're at the most pressure point of their career. And that's what we got in the postseason. So now you kind of have something to gauge by that as well. So yes, Magic fans should be incredibly optimistic and the future is incredibly bright. I think there's only the Detroit Pistons and maybe Philadelphia, right, that has more money than the Orlando Magic. So they'll be in contention for any free agent that they want. And, you know, if you've got draft capital, I mean, you are in a fantastic spot if you're a Magic fan.
You know, I look at Cleveland last year, Dante. They made it back to the playoffs for first time post-LeBron, got knocked out in five games in round number one. And they looked at their roster and they said, we need to add more shooting. They went out and got Max Strus. They went out and got a couple of guys, and now they're advancing, right? I look at Orlando very similarly. The postseason, as you said, depicts the warts on your team. There is no doubt. Let's not sugarcoat it. The Magic are not a good shooting team. They haven't been all year. They relied a lot on their defense. They were good in spot duty for shooting, but ultimately it was not good enough. They need to go out and get something. And look, Malik Monk's a name. Buddy Hield's a name. There are guys available. As you said, the Magic are going to have a lot of room. I would expect them to be very active, kind of like a Cleveland was last year.
Yeah, that's what you think. And you certainly look at it, and the playoffs will expose you, as you mentioned. Any warts that are on your team, the playoffs will absolutely expose you, because you've got 7 games to prepare for, right? So Cleveland just dared us to shoot for 7 games. You made your shots at home. You won 2 of them convincingly. Couldn't make anything on the road in Cleveland for 4 games. I mean, just abysmal offensively for 4 games in Cleveland. So that shows you need guys to make shots, and you need guys consistently that can shoot, and you have to address that. Now, does that mean you'll go all in and this is the summer to you know, your names of Paul George and your Klay Thompson and, you know, Malik Monk? We know the names that are free agents. Does that mean this is the summer we strike and we grab one of those guys? It could be, but there's no way to tell, because you can also do this thing via trade. Or you could say, hey, you know what, we're going to do another year, and Jet Howard and Anthony Black are a couple of guys that could address that. But I think you have to get a veteran, a proven shooter. You have to get a guy that you know can consistently knock down shots, that has a track record of knocking down shots, because it's just going to free up so many things for Paolo and Franz. And so many times this year, you worked so hard on the defensive end and got wide open looks and couldn't hit them. And you just need that consistency. So who is that guy? Who are those 2 guys, maybe? Another wing guy or not, just a spot-up shooter? You almost don't want a guy that demands the basketball, because Paolo and Franz need the ball in their hands, right? So it would have to be more of a spot-up role with the ability to be a playmaker at times, and you want him to be a two-way player, right? Because this team prides itself on the defensive end. So who's that person that's out there that you can acquire in free agency or via trade that can knock down shots and just make things a little bit easier on Paolo and Franz?
Final moments with Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports. And we've been here with Orlando, to a certain extent Shaq, although he was only there 4 years. We really saw it with Dwight Howard. Free agents may not have wanted to come to Orlando 3, 4, 5 years ago. Free agents now want to play with Paolo. I don't think you can underestimate that effect Paolo has, not only with what he does on the court, Dante, but guys see that. Guys see what he did in the postseason, and guys are going to be drawn to free agency in Orlando because of Banchero.
Well, they're watching on a national stage, and to me, that's what's so huge about making it to the postseason. And yeah, it's frustrating, and yeah, it's tough, and it's disappointing that you got knocked out in the way that you got knocked out. But what you did was open everyone's eyes to what you have going on here in Central Florida. And, you know, that's what's the beauty of Paolo playing with Team USA, because he's rubbing elbows with all the greats and going to All-Star Weekend. And, you know, all these guys will now go back to their collective circles and start talking. And I think pros and vets and every, you know, if I'm a veteran that's going to leave a team, or if I'm going to go to a different situation, I want to go to a team that's contending. I want to go to a team that has a chance to win a championship. And you now may, you know, there might be pro. We were the only game yesterday. There was one game in the NBA, and it was the Magic and Cavs. And Orlando got everyone's attention with what they did in the first half. And then in the second half, the glaring need was the scoring. And if I'm a guy that maybe not happy with my current situation or am looking to improve my situation, I look at Orlando and say, maybe I'm the guy that gets them over the hump. And I think that's what's been different from the last couple of years. You're not going to get a marquee guy that has nothing to do with Orlando, or, you know, people say small market, not small market. I don't think any of that matters. You're not going to force your way out of a team, or you're not going to sign in free agency to go to a team that's winning 22 games. That just doesn't make sense from that standpoint. So now it's 47 wins. You were a game out of having home court advantage in the Eastern Conference. You took the Cleveland Cavaliers to 7 in what were some of the biggest playoff games in that franchise's history, considering what was on the line. Coach could get fired. Donovan Mitchell could force his way out. There was so much pressure on that organization to win that series, and you still took them to 7 games. I think you're going to have some guys that are looking at this situation saying, I'm the guy that can put them over the top. And that's what's great about the situation that you're in right now.
Dante, as we begin to wrap up, again, Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports, it's a slippery slope, because I agree. I want to go add some guys, but the backbone of this team. You know, you mentioned Markelle Fultz, a free agent, Gary Harris, a free agent. They got to decide about Ingles. I think Mo Wagner is going to be a guy that's talked about. Jonathan Isaac as well. You don't want to disrupt too much, so it's certainly going to be an interesting summer from that standpoint. Love to bring some guys in, but, man, I loved this team, and I hope we don't lose that many guys.
Well, that's why we're in the situation that we're in, right? Because you didn't panic. You didn't make drastic moves along the way. You determined who are the guys that you're going to build this thing with, and you kept them. And I think that's something that teams get away from. Listen, that's mistakes that this organization has made in years past. You had some talent, and you kind of went too fast. And to Jeff Weltman's credit, the thing you said from the beginning is we're going to build this right. We're not going to build it fast. And the team will dictate to us what we need and when. And that's why I say, you may not think that this, you may look at it and say, okay, yeah, we need shooting, but we've got shooting on our team. Cole's got to be better. Jalen's got to be better. Jet Howard is going to have an opportunity. So you may look at it and say, okay, we don't need to disrupt much. Maybe we got to add another bench guy. Maybe we got to add another key piece to that second unit. Or you may say, okay, we need a starting two. Or we need to get a point guard, and we got to put Jalen over at the two. Whatever you may decide, you have that opportunity, you have that luxury. So we'll have to see which direction they go. But believe me, this group, they find these guys, they put this team together. There was such a chemistry with this group that if there are changes, it's going to be tweaks. It's not going to be any kind of a drastic overhaul. Because that's not what they're about. They're going to get somebody that fits this timeline. They're going to get somebody that helps this group kind of take the incremental next step. If you look at it, okay, this year you make the playoffs. Next year, maybe you win a round or two. And then the year after that is when you go all in and try to get the marquee free agent and go for a championship. Or maybe if the right guy's available, maybe you go all in now. That's the beauty of what you have right now. But I would not expect this group to make any kind of drastic changes where you lose members of your core.
Dante, final question. Basketball, Magic basketball has always mattered in Orlando. We talk about how great that fan base is. But it mattered again here in Jacksonville. I mean, we've aired the games on 1010XL
awesome.
For a handful of years, and we just look at the social media yesterday. People here in Jacksonville cared about Orlando. People in Daytona and Tallahassee, and that's what winning does, man. And I certainly think that this is not going to be a one-off. This is the expectation now that in Central Florida and up here in North Florida, Magic basketball, surrounded, of course, by Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, is going to matter for quite some time.
Well, you guys are a critical market and a critical piece of this thing for the success of this team and pushing the marketing and the promotion and basically your fans and all the fandom and having representatives and representation up in Jacksonville is absolutely huge. We've not had that for the last few years. So to have games and to kind of, get our feet in the water here the last couple of years has meant more to us than you could ever know. Fans embracing it in Jacksonville. Because you're right. All throughout the state of Florida, there are unbelievable Magic fans. And, but the team has not been that competitive the last several years. So now kind of coming back, I think fans are excited. I think they've got everyone's attention. A huge thank you to Steve Griffin, who kind of took a chance on this broadcast and putting us on the air a couple of years ago, and RJ and you guys have done a great job growing and fostering this and getting the word out. And I think you've built a fan base, and you've got people that are hungry for Magic basketball. And we can't thank you enough for that, because when the Magic are winning, man, as you well know, it's a lot of fun. As cities come alive, communities come together. Nothing rallies communities like sports teams. When Jacksonville's playing well, and in Florida State, when these teams are at the top, man, it's a lot of fun and everybody rallies. So now, kind of coming up, and we can all enjoy it together. We're just very appreciative for what you guys have done and being along for the ride. And we're excited, mostly excited for Magic fans. So these are the ones that have been through the most and sticking with this team through thick and thin. And now, hopefully, for the next several years, you've built a sustainable model where Magic fans will have something to be extremely proud of here for several years to come.
Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports. Dante, really appreciate your time. Have a great summer. Man, we're going to blink, and it's going to be October, and we're going to do this thing all over again. We'll dial your phone in the preseason, brother. Thank you as always.
You got it, man. Keep in touch. I'm always available. I got a little time now until we start back up again. So you reach out anytime, and we'll keep in touch.
And thank you to Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark. Yeah, unfortunate ending for the Orlando Magic yesterday. But again, 22 wins 2 years ago, 34 wins last year to 47 wins and three playoff victories. After the hour that I had yesterday, being upset and whatnot, you kind of look at it and you say, man, it's kind of hard to be upset about a turnaround that drastic in only a two-year amount of time. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy Monday night edition here on Hacker After Dark. We certainly appreciate you guys hanging out with us here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. We're in for Baloo all week as Rick is enjoying a much-deserved vacation. We have a ton of people to thank tonight. Again, Dante Marcatelli of Bally Sports. Thank you to Mike DiRocco. We lovingly call him D-Rock, ESPN.com, as we talk Jaguars and rookie minicamp that's upcoming at the end of the week. Also, thank you to Dave Campo, our head coach here on Hacker After Dark, as again, we took a deep dive into the Jaguar draft picks and from a coaching perspective, previewed what the coaches are going to be looking for this upcoming weekend when the rookies come in for rookie minicamp. Now, we will be back tomorrow night on a Tuesday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 6 o'clock. J.J. LaSelva was your producer tonight. J.J. is with us all week, man. Appreciate his time as Dylan Denmark will rejoin us next week. So, J.J., thank you as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. In Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Monday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark, on 1010XL, and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Monday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Tuesday, beginning at 6 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.